This one is for all you tech and sports science nerds. My goodness, I thought I knew a fair amount about sports science and physiology, but then you talk to Dan, and they're testing things and collecting data on things you wouldn't even think of. You know those breathing resistance trainers some people talk about, where you breathe in against resistance and it's supposed to train your diaphragm? I asked him about those, and he said the best way to train that is to just do Olympic lifts in the gym because doing a squat or deadlift flexes all those muscles way more. I can't believe I never thought of that. He just drops golden nugget like that, one after another in this podcast we recorded. Well, actually, in both podcasts we recorded. So if you want to hear me ask him questions like this and hear him talk literally for hours about this stuff, it's all in the full book, How to Become a Pro Cyclist, which you can only get at howtobecomeaprocyclist.com. Okay, get your pen and paper out to take notes and enjoy this short clip of Dan Bigham.
I did enjoy it. Just like the fact that you have like some random like short little sections that you just like fire a random thought out that's just relevant at that time, and then some really like in-depth stuff. I think just in general, giving or lifting the lid on what genuinely facing a dream is like really quite powerful, because I think the media glorifies it. And obviously we see everything through social media nowadays, and it's just not real life. And I think to actually just understand what it's like to try and chase the dream and try and achieve all of that stuff, it's really refreshing, I think. At least from my perspective, I find it quite enjoyable because I've been through a lot of the similar kind of thoughts and processes and dealing with random teams. I think I was quite lucky that I ended up with a team that was just respectful of my random ideas and plans. But having heard horror stories as well, that some managers and some DSs who just... they're on another planet.
Yeah. It's really a shame for that, because sometimes you look at so many cool events they have here in Austria, like they're amazing, like the Grand Fondos and like the public events, and it's because they actually have to do a good job because they depend on it. But then with some of these teams, it's like they know they can get so many riders, they have an unlimited supply of riders that will do anything for it, and then you end up dealing with some interesting situations. But I wanted to just fill the book with information that was like hopefully stuff you couldn't really Google, like that was inside, and try to just make it look light as far as like enjoy this time while you can. Like your life's going to be a party. It's going to be wild. Like enjoy it while you can. And it helps to know that like other people have gone through the exact same thing. Like guys that made it all the way to the top. Like if you feel like it's horrible for you, it's like, come on, man. Everybody's gone through the same thing. Sometimes it's just nice to hear that.
Yeah. I've seen the people go up, down, and back up again. Like James Shaw was a really good example. If he was my teammate in, what year would that have been? 2021, maybe? He was up with Lotte Soudal or was World Tour, then came back to the Conti level, kicked everyone's head in, did a few amazing rides. I think it was Tour Slovenia.
Okay.
That's where he had a breakthrough, and then back in the earth and, rode the Tour.
Yeah, amazing.
Pretty cool. But,
Did I forget anything in the book? I tried to put in as much advice as I could think of. Was there anything, like if you were to give advice for 15, 20, and 25-year-old you, is there anything that like I had left out or that you disagree with or anything like that?
I think there's this myth that propagates within pro cycling that there's people who adapt and people who don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think within altitude, I don't believe that's really the case. And having spoken with a lot of really intelligent people on that, they believe it's more people who prepare and people who don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's probably the same with heat training as well. If you prepare properly for it in respect of altitude, it's basically like you've got to have good iron stores and you've got to make sure you keep your intensity really, really low early on until you start to adapt properly. So keeping an eye on hydration, sleep quality, and I think it's bicarb levels as well in the blood is the other one that you can track. Keep an eye on them. Beyond that, it's basically just don't go bananas. Like you discovered, you recover a lot slower and it's a lot harder and a lot more challenging, and just being a lot more sensible throughout. If you do it right, then it's a huge win. Your body will adapt. Like what's that saying? Life finds a way, and altitude is just one of them that you're challenging your body. So your body will try to sort itself out because that's what it does. That's the whole point of training. And it's just another bonus stimulus, especially one when, let's be honest, we're probably fairly optimized around general life or general training. If you've been a lifetime athlete and you've done 10, 15 years of 20, 25, or in your case, seems like 100-hour weeks, then yeah, you probably need something a little bit different just to change things up. And there's obviously that balancing act. Maybe you don't need to change things up. You just need to do the same thing that gets you to where you need to be. And that's where I think chatting with Steve Cummings was quite interesting. He got to that point in his career where he didn't need or didn't feel the need to change or to roll the dice. He was happy and content. He knew how his body worked. He knew what he needed to do. And he convinced or found some team who was keen to go down that path of we put all the eggs in Steve's basket and Steve will come and get us a stage. And I think that's few and far between really in the grand scheme of things. You don't often find teams that completely put blind faith in a rider in their approach. They often have ways they want to tweak. And then, yeah, on the heat training side, I think little and often probably beats one big kill yourself session.
Yeah.
A bit like, if you draw the training equivalent, it's fine to crack out 20 hours of zone two a week. But if you do 10 hours of VO2 a week, then probably not going to have a good time.
Yeah. By the way, anyone that consumes this stuff should absolutely go watch the doc. It's like a documentary of like how you went after your hour record and just seeing where do you find that again? I know I saw it on Instagram or maybe I clicked a link that you shared.
YouTube, I think, is for your best bet.
Do you know what it's
YouTube.
Called? Like if you
just
were to
search Dan Bigham hour record, it'll probably pop up. It's on the Ineos Grenadiers YouTube channel, so you should be able to find it. It's about 15 minutes long.
Yeah.
Got some cool stuff in. There's a lot of stuff we didn't get to put in, which is a bit annoying, but that's obviously a performance advantage to keep those things to yourself within the team. But
okay.
Enlist the little bit.
Well, okay. So what did you guys find was the best protocol then for heat training? Like just riding in a painter's suit for the hour at the end of a train a session or something?
Yeah, there were a lot of different stimuli that we looked at. And the big one, was that paint suit. So that came from a guy called Chris, who works at Core. Was one of the main guys behind Core. The Core sensor you've probably seen into the world of cycling in the last couple of years basically measures the heat flux coming out from the body and calculates the core temp from that. And it was just a simple way of applying a heat stimulus. So I think historically everyone's either gone in the sauna or built some like makeshift greenhouse in their house and had a heater and everything else. And it becomes one, a bit expensive, and two, time and resource intensive to set up and use. Whereas the good thing with a paint suit is you literally riding on the trainer anyway, just throw the paint suit on and you basically remove evaporative cooling, which is by far and away the biggest mechanism your body uses to cool. So if you get rid of that, your core temp absolutely is going to go up very quickly.
Okay.
And we used it in different ways. I got to the point where I was so well adapted, I could put these.
So if that's the kind of nerdy training science stuff that you like, there's so many other crazy things Dan mentioned in our podcast that I'd never even heard of or thought of before. Things like using the solar charging feature on new Garmins to measure the solar load and calculating how that affects performance during hot races or just races in the sun. It's crazy some of the stuff they're working on that you'd never even think of. So this type of content is interesting to you. You can get the whole book at howtobecomeaprocyclist.com. That's the only place you can get it. And when you buy it, you get all three, the ebook, the audiobook, and the video series bundled together so you can decide how you want to consume it. So I hope you enjoy it. And if you're enjoying this content, you will have an IOU in the bank with me. Maybe you can cash in one day if you share this. I see it every time someone shares it, and you never forget those awesome people that cheered for you and wanted to help you do well when you're just starting out. So if you'd consider sharing this on your Instagram story, I see it and I won't forget it. Thanks, bud.